The Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland has just published a book called Positive Health, 100 Research-Based Positive Psychology and Lifestyle Medicine Tools to Enhance Your Wellbeing. And it does what it says in the tin. And I'm joined now by one of its co-authors, Chartered Clinical Psychologist Trudy Meehan. Good afternoon, Trudy.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
And look, 100 tools here, simple, free, most of them underpinned by scientific research. Before we get to tips, a lot of this is based around positive psychology. We actually spoke to Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology, last year, an amazing man. Tell us in a nutshell what positive psychology is.
Yeah, the easiest way to describe positive psychology is to contrast it to our traditional ideas of psychology. And, you know, clinical psychology is one of the traditional modes, and I'm trained as a clinical psychologist. But the job of a clinical psychologist is to, traditionally, to take someone who's in distress to an absence of suffering or an absence of distress. And that might be from -3, -10, and to take them to 0, where they're in a neutral position, there's an absence of disease or distress.
Okay.
In positive psychology, what Seligman and colleagues like Carol Reef and stuff, they looked at, in the over and above the absence of suffering, what are humans interested in? And what happens if we look at taking somebody from 0 to +3, +5, +10? And so if we look at the other side of things, what do people reach for? What do we say yes to? So in a nutshell, positive psychology is interested in human potential and human flourishing.
Okay. Now, the tips here, I know, are to, they're kind of, it's kind of aimed, as well as being aimed at punters, it's also aimed at medical practitioners. I suppose that this is into the area of, do we call it social prescribing, is it?
Yeah, it falls very much into the area of social prescribing and lifestyle medicine and understanding a broader definition of health and a broader approach to treating and treating our health span rather than our lifespan. So we want to have disease-free years, not just a longer life.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, that's complicated. So we bring in more tools for that.
Yeah,
really.
And it's not always pills and everything. And it's about people keeping their mobility and their wellness and stuff.
Exactly.
For, yeah.
It's about both and. You know, you bring in the pills and the medicine, but you bring in the social prescribing and understand the person is situated in a social world as well.
Yeah, and you see, I do think it's important that we kind of acknowledge that, because sometimes we were talking about happiness a few weeks ago, and you know, someone texted in saying, well, look, that's all very well, but if you're in a really dire situation, your circumstances and environment aren't good, it's not that easy to be grateful or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, environment is an important part of all this.
Environment is central, and more research is showing that environment is the core of our health, that we need to stop thinking of people as individuals. We have to think of ourselves as interconnected. And if we want to thrive and be well, we need healthy communities, healthy relationships, and we need systems that see us as interconnected humans who flourish when we're in good relationships and good systems.
Yeah, it's kind of roughly the kind of stuff Harrison was talking about there as part of it, I suppose. Okay. Optimism is one of the things, really interesting section on that. And so we're programmed to be optimistic, and we get more optimistic as we get older. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have both an optimism bias and a negativity bias, and they work together sometimes to bring a perfect storm. So our optimism bias helps us think about the future and think, it'll be grand. You know, you plan to do something, you underestimate the obstacles and how much time.
Global warming.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so that can be helpful to get us to do something scary, but it can be bad because we underestimate, like, global warming or the negative effects of smoking, for example. As you get older, the reason it gets stronger is, you know, you stop taking on negative kind of feedback and you get more resilient to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and even things like smokers, you were smoking for years, you see the information on the packet of cigarettes telling you you're going to get sick. You haven't gotten sick up to this point. So it reinforces that bias that I'm not going to get sick.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with the negativity bias, we remember negative things much stronger, and negative emotions stay with us longer than positive ones. So the two work hand in hand sometimes.
Okay. And then does this feed into, you talk a lot about mindset.
Yeah.
And that the importance of that.
It's a fascinating area. And especially for me as a psychologist, having worked with people in terms of talking and working with people's thoughts.
Yeah.
But now we understand that there's a connection between our thoughts and our physical body right down to the cells in our bodies.
Yeah.
And the people who are working in mindsets have shown a link between how we perceive the stresses that we experience. And they're called telomeres. They're parts of our chromosomes that mark the aging process.
Okay. So we the same person can be experiencing the same level of stress, but does not need to be as stressed out by
as,
it, essentially.
As impacted by it. One of the key studies was done by Elizabeth Blackburn, who's a biologist, and she won the Nobel Prize for her work on telomeres. She did this piece of work with a psychologist in the States, and they were interested in it, the aging process and stress. They looked at mothers who were looking after children who had various chronic long-term needs, and they were generally very stressed, either because the systems weren't supportive or, yeah. you know. But what they found one finding was that the longer these mothers had cared for children and were stressed, the shorter their telomeres were. So that was an indication that they were aging faster.
Okay.
So that was quite negative, the finding. But within that group, they found something very positive. There was a group of mothers in that group whose telomeres weren't getting shorter. They had the same amount of stress over the same amount of years, but their mindset about the stress was different.
So what's the trick there? What can we do?
So what they interviewed the mothers and looked into it, and they found that seeing stress as a challenge versus a threat
okay.
changed the cells and your organs' response. So if you see something as a threat, your blood circulation and your vascular system contracts. It reduces the blood flow to your organs because you just need to be able to fight, flight or freeze. You don't need a lot more than that. So everything contracts and you get a prolonged release of cortisol, the stress hormone. And, you know, that keeps going so long as you're stressed. Okay. And they're quite negative to your body. If you see something as a challenge, blood flow increases. So you can think better. This is so exciting. I need some to come up with ideas about this challenge.
Yeah.
And you
so
get
buzz.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you get a short, sharp spike in cortisol that's energizing and helpful to your cells and body.
Okay.
So, you know, and
so stop telling ourselves the story that, oh my God, this is terrible, all this stress exactly. and everything, and just go, okay, this is exciting or whatever.
Exactly.
Calming tools and you talk about meditation and nature and being creative and all those things. But I get the impression breathing is kind of at the center of a lot of things, is it?
Yeah, it's almost like the secret language of our body. It can get sometimes we can't think ourselves. You know, it's very hard to think of something really scary as a challenge when you really feel like it's a threat.
Mm.
And breathing can talk to your body in a way that our minds can't, if that makes sense. So you can communicate to your body through breathing. It's okay, we're safe.
Okay, so is that slower, more deliberate breathing?
Yeah, and yeah. and my Porrig, Dr. Porrig Dunn, who's an immunologist, he's done a lot of work in this area. And it's a very simple form of breathing. You breathe yeah. in for 5 seconds and you breathe out for 5 seconds. So the in-breath and the out-breath are the same. And that, in a sense, puts your nervous system into neutral.
That's it, just in for five over, because there are a lot of complex breath
exactly.
equations. So what, just stop
yep.
and consciously take a few 5 second in, 5 second out breaths
exactly.
and that should calm down your
That should calm down.
System.
You're trying
okay.
to equalise, you're trying to put your system into neutral so that the in-breath and the out-breath are the same. Even if you can only do it, sometimes if you're very stressed, you can only breathe for 3 seconds at a time. But so long as the in and out are the same,
okay.
equalise.
Okay. More play.
More play. It's really important. It's fun. It increases positive emotions, but it also makes us better decision makers. So the interesting thing about play is it releases endogenous opioids, which are opioids and feel good chemicals belonging to our own system. And that, number one, makes us feel good, but they impact on the front part of the brain, which is involved in decision making, and allow it actually increases the number of operations the front part of the brain can make. And so we get better at planning, thinking through consequences. So we get cleverer when we play.
Okay. Watch some comedy.
Yeah. And it's very simple. You want to improve positive emotions. The more positive emotions you have, the better we're able to offset the negative emotions. Comedy makes us laugh. And do it over, okay. you know, not just one. Give yourself a comedy binge.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And dose is important.
So it's about kind of crowding out the negative here, basically, by adding in more positive stuff. Is it?
Yeah. And balancing it out. We're always going to have negative. And negative is important. You know, you grow through
okay.
negative experiences.
Yeah.
It's not saying not to have them, But it's to offset that and bring a bit more balance in.
Okay, so people who have children, they should save for their children. Not always an easy thing to do.
Neither of us can keep a straight face for that one. Yeah, especially for people who have children, because there's as much as we love our children, we're also weighed down by a lot of guilt and stress and worry about our children. And if we can separate our responsibility as a parent and see them as separate creatures, just these unique beings in the world, they're often really cool and amazing. You know, and you can just enjoy them if you can savour them. And even if you just look at a toddler, they're very peculiar looking creatures, you know. They're uniquely cute. So if you focus in on those small things rather than on what they're doing and the consequences and if they're, you know, kind of going to get somewhere in the future, just in that very single moment, just look at them as unique beings.
Okay, that's a great idea. All right, I'll try it. Forgiveness, you say, is about the self. The perpetrator is irrelevant.
It's a really tough one. We know that when we forgive, it has really positive impacts. But we also know that that's a process and that sometimes forgiveness isn't a good idea. So forgiveness can be seen as kind of saying, okay, I'm agreeing with that behaviour, you know, and we don't want to agree with behaviour. So forgiveness has to go hand in hand with an adequate justice system and redress for people as well. We know that people who are in domestic abuse situations, for example, if they forgive, they're more likely to stay. So sometimes, so forgiveness is about a process, really.
Okay.
And it's about making space for you to let go of some of the weight that's been put on you through the negative experiences.
Okay, listen, just before you go, tell me briefly about writing your own most feared obituary.
It's a great one. You know, I'm an optimist, but one of the things that you need to do as an optimist sometimes is think of the worst case scenario. And writing your worst obituary is kind of going, if I keep up all these bad habits, if I keep being cranky or, you know, whatever you're kind of doing that's quite negative, what are people going to say about me in the end? And what do I want? It's around what matters to you rather than what's the matter with you.
Okay. Truly me, and thanks a million. The book is called Positive Health, 100 Research-Based Positive Psychology and Lifestyle Medicine Tools to Enhance Your Wellbeing. Thanks, Trudy.